our listeners know us at this point. We're not a hot take machine. I mean, no. We are rooted in valuation, and this is all coming from that place, and we're going to talk all about it this offseason.
Episode 150, 150 episodes of Flags Fly Forever are now in the books. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined once again by my usual co-hosts, Brett Sayer, BP's managing editor, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Guys, it's been a minute. It's almost the end of September. What's going on? How are you guys?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. It's been a long season. I'm starting to feel the effects as we head towards the off season now. I feel like Matt Harvey. I'm just a little tired at this point, but I'm hanging in there.
You look confused.
Yes, I feel very confused. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just watching the events at the end of the season. As we're recording this, the home run record has been broken. I had an interesting observation, which is even though the home run record's been broken, this year has the 17th highest OPS in history. So it is not 2000. It is not your father's or your older brother's home run binge.
We're going to talk a lot about the home run surge once again this offseason. I know we talked about it a ton last year, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about. And I know some sites are already looking ahead to 2018. We'll get to that in a moment, but... I want to start here. No housekeeping tonight. You know where to find us on Twitter, how to reach us. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today. All our off-season content is coming. It's going to be awesome. The playoffs, actually, playoff coverage is probably the best time to subscribe to BP. That's when all of our best content goes up. I really enjoy all our game recaps and everything like that. So make sure you go subscribe there. We're recording this on Tuesday night. It is September 19th. It's championship week in most leagues and head-to-head leagues, you know, final 2 weeks here for roto leagues. And I wanted to ask you guys if either of you still have any title hopes or aspirations still on the line here as we come down to the stretch. How are you guys faring so far?
It has not been a banner season overall. I'm going to end up being sort of nondescript, middle of the pack ish in both labor and tout, a little bit better in tout than in labor. I have a chance for sixth or seventh in tout out of 15, and labor is probably closer to 10th or 11th. But once you finish outside the top one, it doesn't really matter. You're in it to win it. My big home league is a little bit of a cluster. There are seven teams within 10 points of each other going into the last week and a half of the year. I am the seventh team. So, with a lot of luck, I could make a run up into one of the top positions, but I'm not sure how likely that is. I have my two sim leagues are both going to make the playoffs, and I won't find out what's going to happen with that until Scorsese releases their playoff stuff, which is usually about 5 or 6 days after the end of the regular season.
Sounds intense.
But other than that,
I don't know how you keep track of all those teams. Like that's a lot.
That's literally only a third of my teams. I play in 15 leagues. Honestly, a third of them, I can't tell you how I did this year, but it's a blessing and a curse.
A lot of Chris O'Grady watching this year, from what I gather. Mike, how are your teams faring so far?
You aren't so great a team. That is a thing.
I know.
I'm kind of in the same boat as Brett. I'm fifth in labor right now. I could finish second, but it would take craziness to finish first. I was in first in that league, I think, for 2 days, like a month and a half ago. It's been tight all year, but things are going the wrong way. Tout, I'm 10th. I've actually rallied from being – well, actually, no, I'm 9th. I'm sorry. I've rallied from being, like, all the way at the bottom, thanks mostly to Rhys Hoskins. But I had so many injuries in that league. Of the 23 players I bought, 14 spent time on the DL. I think that's a record for me. You know, they weren't all major injuries, but when it's that many injuries, it's just impossible to overcome. And then CBS and the NL, you know, and I won't go through all my leagues either, like Brett said, but CBS and the NL, same kind of thing as labor. I'm fifth. I could finish second, but in that league, I'm about 20 points out of first. The team there is going to win. So, you know, I agree with Brett. Like, it's okay to finish second, and in terms of process, you know, it's like, well, I probably did most things right, but you do want to win, and you know, if you finish second, it's like, you know, it's nice, but whatever.
Yeah, you brought up all the injuries, and that was actually something I asked for feedback on Twitter for, what people came away with from their sort of 2017 takeaways. And one of the most frequent responses I got was, we need more DL slots, or just there were so many injuries. So I feel like people felt that more this year, that really got hit hard with injuries, but it didn't seem that crazy to me, because a lot of it was just 10-day DL stints. Like, guys were just going on the DL who probably would have sat out, you know, that many games anyway. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I have one league where a home dynasty league I've been in for like 10 years now, and I've been rebuilding for the last few seasons, so to finally make a playoff push is kind of a big deal, and I don't know if I'm gonna win, but I'm very excited about it. And Matt Olson, of all people, is carrying this team. He's hitting pretty much a home run every day now. He's homered in 5 straight games, so I don't know. Years of planning, and Matt Olson is carrying me in a title game. It makes no sense, but that's sort of the nature of fantasy baseball. So I want to start off here, because a lot of people listening to this podcast, they're in championship games, or they're coming down like you, Brett. They're trying to make a late comeback here. So I wanted to ask you first, you know, what is your sort of strategy? Because I noticed that you and Mike and a lot of other people have gotten a lot of questions about, well, who should I start? The players who've gotten me there, or guys that I've just picked up who are hot right now. So are you relying on, you know, sort of the guys who brought you there, or riding the hot hand here?
I am not a ride the hot hand guy the last month or so of the season, just because I find that September stats are just far more unpredictable than stats any other time of year. Personally, what I like to do is I like to have consistency of thought and consistency of decision making. So I went through a period a long time ago when I did way too much tinkering with lineups and stuff like that, and it always felt like it seemed to come back to bite me for different reasons that I was not expecting. So I made the decision a while back that I was just going to be consistent in the player I play down the stretch. And that way, if I make a mistake, it'll at least be because of good process and not because of a gut call that I either didn't think all the way through or overthought or anything like that. So I'm very much a go with the guys who got you there. Although that said, when I say guys who got you there, I mean, you know, I mean, your better performers on your team, not just people that you happen to have rostered the whole year. If you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about sort of a back end, you know, middle infielder, and you have, you know, you have a guy who you've just had around for the whole season and a guy who is really hot right now, you then you go with the guy who's hot. But if you're if you're talking about a player who is a known commodity who has been a high performer, unless they're hurt, I'm not going to sit them out.
Yeah, I was gonna say the only real caveat there is sort of injury and track record. I would take those into effect, but I always look at it like you have to consider what's most likely to happen, and I try not to, like you said, talking about process here, I try not to make a move now that I wouldn't be comfortable making in, let's say, June or July. I want to be as risk averse as possible in this situation, because you can do more harm than good by trying to make a small move to try and gain an edge somewhere. I'm with you there. Mike, what are your thoughts here? Because I think it's weird. Some people like to be aggressive and they'll pick up guys to try and exploit a certain matchup, and then other people are like Brett and they don't want to mess with it. So where do you stand on this whole debate? Because I've heard both sides of the argument.
Well, I play in deeper leagues, so generally I don't have much of a choice. this week I was looking at the free agent pool in Labor AL, and I was kind of crying. Like Richard Reyna was pretty much the only player with regular at-bats available. Well, and you know, you're in CBS AL, so you know what I'm talking about.
It's so bad.
What I do find is it's kind of common sense with hitters. If you can replace someone who's not playing or someone who's kind of hurt, like I'd say, if you're in a shallower league like right now and you're still sitting on Hanley Ramirez or Carlos Gomez, you need to let those guys go. Like you're just waiting for nothing, or at least reserve them if you can. You know, the other way with pitchers, it's a little more delicate. But what I find there, it's kind of the same concept, particularly with 2 weeks left. It's just so easy to over tinker and make mistakes and hurt yourself more than help yourself. I would say, unless you're so safe in ERA and WHIP that, you know, all you care about are wins and strikeouts, then fine, just load up, go for two start guys, go for volume. But otherwise, there's so much risk and you can really hurt yourself. And another thing, don't just pick up a bunch of relievers if you're hoping to protect your rate categories. That can work, but that can also really backfire. I've seen teams do that, and I've come close to doing it, where it's like, I'm just going to go with relievers. And last week, those guys come in, they just pitch and pitch. The managers don't care. They're like, whatever, you know, I'm just trying to get out of the season. This is particularly true for teams that are out of it completely. So, yeah, I'm with Brett. The less tinkering you do, the better. Quite honestly, if you've built a good team up to this point and you're in the lead or you're closing in on a lead, things should take care of themselves. And if they don't, I'd rather go down with the best players that I've had all year as opposed to somebody, you know, for a week that I'm just kind of gambling on.
Yeah, the sort of small sample caveats apply there. I'm not a fan of streaming. I get questions all week. I don't know about you guys. I get questions about, well, who should I start? And it's always like some streaming options. And I'm like, no, just none of them. Because whoever you pick is going to be wrong. Just know up front that you're not going to nail it. Just that's the nature of September baseball. So I'm not a fan of streaming starting pitchers at this time of the year, because it's just way too risky for me at this point. So, all right. The other question I had that relates to the finals here is, I guess, like, you guys must have considered this, but who's a name at this time of the year that you kind of look at as someone who could potentially help someone in a playoff series? Like, because the name for me is someone like Luis Valbuena. I know he's a guy you've mentioned on this show.
Well, that's my guy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's talk about Valbuena. Talk about him, because he's a guy, like, that's a guy, like, I think he can help you with if you can pick a matchup spot right. But that's, like, a small, tiny move. It's not a major one. But Valbuena and some other guys that you think might be helpful.
Okay. Well, let me start by talking about Valbuena and what he's been doing. I mean, he's been hitting for a low batting average. That's just kind of what he does. But he's got He's got 15 second half home runs, and he is mostly just playing against right-handed pitching. So if you have a daily league, daily lineup league, or he's got a lot of matchups against right-handed pitching in a given week, he's a pretty solid guy to plug in there as a player who is likely to be unowned in most non-extremely deep leagues. It really just depends how deep you want to go for some of this stuff. There's been a lot written about him over the last couple of days at BP, but Kyle Gibson has been very good lately for the Twins. He's certainly someone who has a hot hand. You can kind of ride it or not. I mean, even his last start, which was certainly not his best start. It was the first time he'd allowed more than two earned runs in a start since the middle of August. He still got eight strikeouts and a win. So he's actually going to pitch against Detroit on Friday, if you can take advantage of that, that's a pretty nice matchup.
It's a good spot.
Some of these players are generally owned. The hot streak that Mike Clevinger has been on has probably gotten him owned in just about every league. But if he is unowned in any league, that is one, you probably need a new league. But two, you should pick him up. You know, guys like Nick Castellanos is hitting really well. Jose Reyes has been hitting really well and stealing a bunch of bases. In deeper leagues, Nori Aoki's been running for the Mets and hitting leadoff some of the time, which is hilarious. But it's also a thing that's really happening for some reason, mostly because Michael Conforto is on the DL. But there are a number of these types of guys. You just have to be careful about when you use them over players that you have been relying on and should expect more from.
Yeah. So the last couple of episodes here, Mark Barry, our colleague at BP, he's sort of filled in. We've done the Free Agent Watch Fridays and talked about the column that we've been doing together. And like Castellanos is a guy I wrote about since I think the start of August. He's hitting over 300. Like he's playing for a job next year, basically. So he's been really good. Matt Olson was a guy who was out there in like half a leagues until a week ago. Kevin Kiermaier, another guy like that. So there were guys here in the last couple of days or so that you probably could have picked up. Like Luke Weaver over the last couple of weeks has taken advantage of some nice matchups. Gibson was a good that's a good pull there. Mike, is there anybody for you that sort of stands out? I love the Luis Valbuenas of the world because you kind of know what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. So is there anybody for you? I know you said you sort of look in the deeper leagues, but is there anyone you found yourself sort of gravitating towards here in the last couple of days here?
Yeah, I mean, not really. You know, I think I wrote about him in the Fab column. And again, this is for not super deep leagues because he's gone. But, you know, someone like Jaime Candelario, I like him for a deeper mixed league. He's producing. You know, I've watched him. His approach up there is really good. You know, the BABIP's obviously going to drop because, you know, nobody's going to do that. But he's got some power. And I think more importantly, Detroit's going to be heading on the road in the last week. He hit some warning track flies in that park that would go out just about anywhere else. I see Nick Williams is surprisingly available in a number of leagues, and I don't really understand why. You know, it's more like kind of a standard mixed league, but he's somebody I'd want to have. Another player whose approach I really like. You know, if you're looking for somebody who's picked it up after starting out really bad, speaking of a rookie, Dom Smith in the last 30 days is actually hitting .273. He's picked it up. Again, all these guys, you know, we're not talking about players here who are great, because if they were great, they wouldn't be free agents. You're talking about players who might help your team it might be better than that last guy or that second to last guy on your roster.
You know what I just realized? That it's been so long since we've done a podcast that we've totally missed the Rhys Hoskins experience here on this show. Like, we haven't been on to talk about it. But he's been insane. Matt Olson's been killing it. Victor Robles is up. Like, so much has happened. It's kind of crazy. I don't think we have time to cover all this tonight, but Mike, you're our resident Philly expert, being in that area. I mean, this Hoskins thing, is it starting to get out of control here? Or, I know he's cooled off the last couple of days, but well, it feels like for a while people were acting like he was Mike Trout or something. It was weird.
They're talking about baseball in Philadelphia in September, and you know, a year where the team is losing a lot of games. So yeah, it's locally it's definitely gotten out of control. I don't know about nationally. He was up there for a while, but now it seems like Matt Olson is the latest guy everyone's talking about. So this is what I'll say about Hoskins. You know, we know he's not going to hit, you know, 80 home runs or whatever. You know, we've gone through this so many times now. We've gone through this with Eric Thames. You know, we've gone through this with Aaron Judge. But what I do know about Hoskins is I've watched a few games. His approach is legitimate. He has a really excellent batting eye. He doesn't swing at too many bad pitches. You know, tonight he had that bat against Yu Darvish that I was really impressed by. You know, it just resulted in a hard hit single. But it was an 8-pitch at bat against Yu Darvish where he made one bad swing, fouled off some tough pitches, and, you know, then he got the single. Now, granted, it was Darvish's last batter of the night, so it wasn't like it was, you know, fresh Yu Darvish. But that's kind of been the knock on Hoskins. I think, Brett, you might have mentioned this on social media, that, you know, Hoskins has hit a lot of home runs off a weak competition. And that's fair. But what I've seen against Hoskins in some of these games against the Dodgers, I think he's going to be a player. You know, same thing. He's not going to, you know, he's not Babe Ruth, but I could see him hitting 35 home runs, you know, maybe 40 home runs next year with a 270 average.
Yeah, I was having a little bit too much fun with that tweet, but
it was funny. I mean, it was a funny tweet.
It's not that if you actually look at the tweet is intentionally misleading, because if you look at the actual names that he's homered off of, there are some real pitchers that he's homered. He's homered off of Kyle Hendricks. He's homered off of Jose Quintana. It just so happens that none of them are better than Craig Stammen.
The Cubs aren't very good. I'm just kidding. You should open with that, George, and see how many people like destroy me on Twitter.
Kyle McGrath, elite reliever. I know. You know what, Brett? Your tweet was like, you know how when you have like a fish tank, and someone goes up and can I feed your fish, and then they dump like the entire thing of fish food in there. That's what you essentially did with this tweet. You just poured all the fish food in, and the fish just swarmed to it. So, yeah, nice work. I also coincidentally set Twitter on fire today, but we're going to get to that later. We've all had our missteps on social media lately. Victor Robles, I really want to hit on this quick because, Brett, he's fantastic. I mean, I don't understand, frankly, why he's not playing every day, because he's good enough to warrant doing that. He's gonna be pretty special. He's so fast and drives the ball to the gaps. He's really good. I'm blown away by how good he is right now at 20.
Yeah, he's gonna be a really good one, and I really think that the Nationals are going to give a little playing time to him over Jason Wirth when the playoffs come.
They should.
I don't see really any reason not to. Wirth has been struggling since he got back, and he's just terrible defensively anyway. Robles is like having another center fielder. I mean, he is having another center fielder out there. But you know, I think I had said when they first called him up that Robles is talented enough to start on a playoff team right now for a team that's not relying on him, but he also has the skill set to do what Jerod Dyson did for the Royals in 2015. Right. where they can, you know, if the Nationals want to start Jason Wirth, they can start him. Then they can put Robles in center field, slide Michael Taylor over to a corner and play a really good outfield defense the rest of the way and deploy him as a pinch runner when they need to. So it gives them a lot of options, especially if, especially depending on what happens with Harper. But man, Robles is going to be a really good one.
Yeah. The floor is like crazy high with him. When you think about what he can do from just having the steals, but he's going to hit for average. He's got a little bit of power. You can see that it's coming. Like, I don't know what the ceiling looks like ultimately. But he's got it. Like, you can just tell immediately by watching him for 5 minutes. He's good. Not everyone can be in the playoffs or competing for a championship here. So I want to give a little bit of advice here from you guys to those fantasy owners who are listening to this show. They're still invested and they're looking towards next year. If you're in a keeper or a dynasty, or you're in a format where you have the ability to carry players over to the next year, something like that. Who are some guys that are right now out there on the waiver wire that either of you guys think fantasy owners should be targeting? Like, for me, the one name I throw out there is like a guy like Willie Calhoun, who might be out there in some shallower formats. He's playing right now. He, as Craig Goldstein would say, he can hit, and he's going to probably be their DH next year, I would think. So I like Willie Calhoun. I'll throw it out to you first, Brett. Who's a guy out there that you like that maybe is a little bit of a deeper pull here, but someone you think fantasy owners should be looking at off the wire?
The guy who I like and who I've stashed in a couple of leagues over the last month is Wilmer Defoe on the Nationals.
Ooh.
He is going to be a multi-position. He'll be a multi-eligibility guy next year. He's been very solid while he's been playing. He's hit .278. He's got 5 homers, 9 steals in about 300 at bats. He's not going to be a superstar, but the Nationals are going to have the opportunity to improve on their team this offseason. And even though Defoe is not likely to have a starting role on the Nationals, he's one of those guys who could be pretty interesting trade bait. And if he were to end up in a position this offseason where he had a role in front of him, I think that you could be looking at someone who could be a borderline top, 15 shortstop, with sort of the combination of all around play with the, with the 20 to 25 steal speed. So he's a guy who I have my my eye out on, as someone who could increase their value a decent amount over the course of the off season between when waivers end and when the keeper deadline is.
That's a really good one. I like Defoe a little bit. He's played well lately, and they kept him in the lineup once Turner got back. I think that's a big indication for how they feel about him moving forward. Mike, do you have anyone like that you've kind of stashed? You brought up Nick Williams earlier. I think that's a good name that sort of fits this mold. But is there anyone else that you've kind of had an eye on?
Yeah. I kind of brought up the guys before. Mm-hmm. Williams and Smith that I was sort of looking at, and Smith's an example again of somebody. I don't oversell him, want to be careful about this, but sometimes I think when a player comes up and he has a bad start, he gets completely written off, and there's just no buzz around him whatsoever, and it's not hard to see him being a low end deeper mix guy. Particularly because I don't see the Mets bringing a first baseman in, or if they do, it's going to be someone to platoon with him, or maybe Wilmer Flores does that. Williams is probably a good example of that. Someone else in that mold who, I don't want to call him a sleeper because he's been up for a while, and it's mostly defensive reputation, is Matt Chapman. I don't really like the average with him, but you know, he is someone who, I know home runs, you know, 25 home runs isn't what it once was, but he is on pace at 25 home runs or maybe a little bit more than that over the course of a full season. And again, you know, these are the sorts of players, not to oversell them, but they're going to get overlooked just because of the power boost. And yeah, we're going to talk about that power, I know, at some point when we do our retrospective shows in the next couple months.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting calculus because so much right now it's so hard to value that power and to figure it out. But I still believe 25 home runs at third base is going to have some value.
What's interesting about you mentioned the home runs, home run surge impacting the landscape. I mean, we touched on it last year, but we've noticed an even more dramatic sort of decline in stolen bases this year, even. And there's sort of divide in starting pitching too. I think all of those things happening together at the same time, I think is going to be sort of the central focus of our discussion this offseason. But hey, we got a lot of time to get to that. The one guy I will throw out here that sort of fits this mold is someone who may have been cut in your league. Or someone you could probably get this offseason, but Marwin Gonzalez is a guy. I noticed he got dropped in a bunch of spots that I wasn't expecting. He had a brutal August. I just looked up. He hit .221 with only two homers in nearly 100 at-bats in August. I mean, he was bad. But he's hitting again in September. He is a guy who's at .293 with 22 homers and 7 steals in 420 at-bats this season. And he's shortstop, third base, and outfield eligible next year. So, yeah, I like Marwin Gonzalez. He's a guy I definitely would be looking to go after if their owner soured on them this offseason. You know, if they weren't paying attention to his sort of rebound here in September.
I want to throw out one other name in the thing we were just doing.
Perfect.
I'm going to throw out a player who I talked about before this season and then did absolutely nothing and has a career 28 OPS plus.
Kyle Schwarber?
I am going to buy in again, mostly because he still hasn't turned 23 yet. But I do expect Raul Mondesi to be the Royals starting shortstop next year. And he was terrible this year in his stint, but he hit .305 with 13 homers and 21 steals in 80 something games in AAA, and I think he could be a pretty valuable shortstop if he can tap into that talent in the majors.
All right, so I want to talk about this for 5 minutes here, and then we'll wrap up, because I think we've gone a little bit longer than we wanted to tonight, but I feel like it merits a discussion. How soon before we get into, like, January here, how much time do you take before you start looking ahead to 2018? Because I'm actually participating in a 2018 mock draft coming up here later this week. It's an industry draft. Our good buddy Justin Mason, Mike, you've been on his podcast, and I have as well.
So is Brett, actually.
Oh, you have?
I had been wanting to go on for a little while, and we finally made the time work. I think like 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh wow,
it's a good podcast. So.
It was in the summer. I listened to it while I was mowing the lawn, so I remember it was like the time of year it was.
I can't believe I missed it. I missed that episode, which is now I regret, and I'm gonna have to go back and listen to it later. But yeah, we've all been on his podcast.
It's right around the time of the draft.
Oh yeah, good times. A lot of Mackenzie Gore talk, I would assume there.
Lay your hands off of Mackenzie Gore.
He's pretty good. His numbers in the isn't he in the rookie league? They're insane right now.
Who cares?
Yeah, I know they're good.
He's dreamy.
He's striking everyone out. He's got the good face.
He's striking out my heart.
That's great. So I'm doing this draft that he's put together. It's the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to it. Justin and those guys, they do a good job. So he's put together this draft, and I set my mentions on fire today by tweeting out that I didn't think Giancarlo Stanton with the 9th overall pick was something I would be comfortable doing, and that proceeded to blow up the internet for a few hours. I was bombarded with notifications, and it's not just that one draft where I've seen Stanton go in the first round, but it's several now. And my point was, you know, I see JD Martinez going in the third round. I'd love to take someone else in the first round and then go get Martinez or someone like that, a comparable power hitter. So here's where I'm going. You can go one of two ways with this, Brett. I'm going to throw it open to you first here. You can either talk about Stanton being a first rounder next year, or how soon you start to look ahead to next season. Because I'm already starting to think about it a little bit, but I don't want to go there just yet. You know what I mean?
I'm sort of the odd duck here. I've been looking ahead to 2018 probably for about 3 years now.
Oh my God.
So I play in a lot of dynasty leagues. I like to think long term. So there's never too early of a time to start thinking about next year or the year after. At least a little bit. A little bit is always healthy. But we're gonna get into this a lot this off season, and it ties in with what you were saying about Stanton. And the fact is that power in today's game is everywhere, and the guys who have elite power, and Stanton has the most elite power this year of anybody else. Even those guys with elite power, if they are not contributing in all five categories, it is becoming a harder case to make that they should be first round picks. And you know, there is such a lack of speed, and that combined with the fact that the pitching landscape has completely changed, I think is going to cause me, probably you, and a lot of other people to really rethink where they take power hitters in drafts, at least for next year.
Mike, your thoughts on this, because you've already hit on it a little bit today, but this goes right to the core of what you were talking about earlier. So let's do it. Let's talk about it.
Well, to play devil's advocate for a moment, to what Brett was saying, I do agree about the power in general and about the idea that you want a five category guy. You know, on the other hand, Stanton is the guy who could hit 60 to 65 home runs and is a cut above everybody else. So there's that to consider, but where I'm kind of down on Stanton is I look at him. So the PFM coming into today had him 4th overall. You know, that's 5x5 with average, not OBP, where obviously he's more valuable. You know, my problem is I look at the batting averages that he's put up from season to season, and it's kind of like, well, yeah, you know, if you think you're going to get the year where he hits 288. Like he did in 2014 or 279, like he was hitting coming into today. Well, that's great. The problem is if he hits 250 or 255, which he could also do, then you're going from a four category or a 3.5 category guy to a three category guy. And to Brett's point, if you're taking someone like Stanton in the first round who doesn't at a minimum also hit 300 or close to 300, you're probably going to lose value. What you don't want to do with those first round picks, you don't, they all could lose value, but you don't want to start out with a player where you're like, well, you know, in the best case scenario, he's going to be like the 12th best player and I'm taking him 6th overall. I'm not necessarily against it, but I probably wouldn't do it myself. Like if someone else does it, more power to them. But I'm with you, George. I'd just rather not make that play.
You know, Mike, you mentioned his fourth place on the Stanton being in fourth on the PFM right now, and that's for a 15-team mixed league. But I think Rob Silver pointed this out on Twitter. There were a lot of good responses to this tweet, by the way. We had a long discussion. You can go read it if you want. But he made a really good point that, you know, a big driver of his value this year is that Stanton, I think, is leading the league in runs scored and RBI. So this is basically the peak max outcome, best case scenario, Stanton. And if you're going to take him in the first round, he basically has to do that again. And you're not even factoring in his injury history. I get it, like the arguments of why people like him, but he basically has to just do this again to even be worth what you're paying for him. So you're paying for all that upside up front. It just takes all the profit out of it right away. So I'm with you guys. I'm not a big fan of this Stanton first round thing. I feel like he's going to be the most like divisive player out there. So yeah. All right.
Yeah, I mean you can't. You know, you can't throw shade on the injury stuff either. I mean, Stanton just played in his 147th game of the year. The last time he played more than 147 games was 2011, when the Marlins were still the Florida Marlins. I mean, Yep. He's you go chasing these stats, you're potentially making a bad bet. You're chasing after a ghost. That's not to say Stanton is not very good. He is a very good hitter. But his career high in home runs before the season was 37. You don't go in this environment. You don't chase power unless it comes in a more consistent and well-rounded package than Stanton comes in.
Or it's at a huge discount, which Stanton was this past year. And what we're all, I think, trying to say is that the floor for Stanton is just insanely low for a first-round guy. Like, you could get like nothing out of this pick. And in a best-case scenario, you're probably breaking even.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you even have to go that far back. In 2016, he hit .240 with 27 home runs.
Mm. Stanton, man.
I like Stanton. I like Stanton. We all like him. I don't want this to come off as, but you want a fiery hot take? He's not the Marlin I would take first in 2018.
Wait, who are you taking?
I'm taking D. Gordon over Giancarlo Stanton as of right now for 2018.
That is kind of a fire take.
That makes sense, and Gordon's been really good this year. See, for me with Stanton, I because of that inconsistency, when I price him or rank him, I will rank him as someone I'm expecting 40 to 45 home runs out of, which to Brett's point, I'm saying that I'm going to rank him like he'll have his second best raw power year of his career in terms of the raw output. So it's still a pretty good ranking, but there will be people paying for him to hit 55 to 60 home runs, and I don't want any part of that. I'd rather take someone like Charlie Blackmon, who's done it year in year out. I obviously want Mike Trout. I'd prefer Nolan Arenado, and you know, if you just run through the list,
Goldschmidt, I have a feeling Altuve.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'll stand.
The list goes on.
I'll probably have Stanton somewhere in the second round, and maybe it'll even be like high in the second round of a 15 team. But I just know I won't get him.
Yeah.
He'll be in the 15 to 20 range for me. He's extremely good.
Yeah,
but the value proposition is not what it used to be.
Yeah, like I'm seeing him go in the 5 to 10 range of these. I know it's so early that it's stupid to even be talking about a mock draft. I mean, it's a little bit. That was very blunt.
Are you mocking the mock draft?
No, I think they have some value because it shows where we are right now, but like to see Stanton going in that like 5 to 10 range to me just seems kind of nuts. But like this year to me, his year this season has I think elevated the floor of what we think he can do power wise. So yeah, I don't know. I tweeted out I think since 2014 in terms of weighted on base average, the top five: Trout, Votto, Goldie, Harper, JD Martinez, and Stanton are both tied for fifth. So, like, if you're going to give me JD Martinez 20 picks later, I'm taking JD Martinez. It's the same player.
Well,
my point.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, that's exactly it, too. It said even if you think Stanton is better than Martinez, it's not a 20 pick difference.
Right,
and that's exactly what it's going to come down to. Stan's going to be a stretch because there's so much power and because you can put together a JD Martinez and somebody else who's going to surpass Stan.
Yeah. Brett, what was your point?
Yeah. And where's Aaron Judge going?
I have to pull it up.
You know who has the same number of 40 home run seasons as Giancarlo Stanton? Aaron Judge.
That's the thing with these guys. Like, you could make the argument for, like, Hoskins or Bellinger in, like, the fourth round. I want to pull it up because I know Judge went. I think he went either the end of the second or I want to say the first pick of the second round. So 13th. The turn was Kershaw and Judge. So second rounder, Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Here we are. Welcome to 2018, folks. It's gonna be a fun offseason. I feel like we're going to have hotter takes than we have in past years because of what the landscape looks like. So this is going to be fun. I'm excited.
But you'll have my valuations to put it all in perspective. So don't worry. And well, actually, I say that as a joke, but this is when valuation really helps, because when you have those dollar values in front of you, it puts a lot of this into perspective.
I don't think Elvis
it really does. And we're going to been taken. We're going to. Yeah, this isn't like a, you know, our listeners know us at this point. We're not a hot take machine. I mean, we are rooted in valuation, and this is all coming from that place. And we're going to talk all about it this offseason.
Yeah, this is like right in our wheelhouse. It hits right on that intersection. Like, if you're doing a Venn diagram, it's like valuation, process, and then results. We're hitting all of it right there. All right, guys, that'll do it. Let's take a quick break and come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 150. Can you believe, guys, it's been 150 episodes?
Yeah, and I think I've made that many cultural references that George does not understand.
That sounds about right.
I should do a montage. Just go back through all of them and figure out like how many references you've made. But no, that'll come later. That's for episode 200. So keep listening, everybody. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. If you subscribe to the super premium membership, you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. You can follow all of us on Twitter as well, where we are scorching hot take machines at the moment, which is contrary to our nature, but that's what we're doing. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And you can blow up my mentions at George Bissell. Thank you to everybody who's subscribed or rated or reviewed the podcast. If you haven't done it yet, please do. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously. And, you know, we come on, we do this for like an hour every other week now. It's every week in season. It's free. We don't ask for anything, but this will be the one thing we ask for. So please go help us out there if you enjoy the show. So that's going to do it for all of us. Like I just said, we're going to be recording every other week now as we get into the offseason. We might have a little bit of a break here during the playoffs as we get cracking on a number of offseason projects here. So it might be a minute, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about 2018. So for Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, it's George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Till our next show. So long, everybody.